AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Corn and soybean futures pinned together, consecutive higher closes, but the sellers in the wheat market, they've just turned outright nasty. Some weakness in the cash lean hog market pulled the rug out from under futures again, and live cattle futures gave back some of this week's gains.
Live from the midst of the losses and gains games via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk this afternoon. We'll talk with Pete Meyer from S&P Global Commodity Insights. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Lowy.
All right, Davis, thank you very much. And another beautiful day out there.
Gorgeous.
It looks like we're looking at about 81 degrees here in northeast Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
82 tomorrow, a chance of rain on Friday as well, with a high of 77, I should say. Chance of rain again on Saturday, and then it's crop tour week. And as I take a look at crop tour week, and I see highs of 80, 80, 82, and 81, I like my chances for having a comfortable week out on the road. I like that a lot.
Well, and you'll look fantastic in your Pro Farmer Crop Tour Speedo too. I think it'll be perfect weather for that.
I wore it once. It was it was quite the rage. Yeah, people really seem to enjoy that a lot. But you can only do something like that once, Davis.
Give the people what they want, baby.
Give them what they want. Cannot do it. Looking forward to the conversation with Pete Meyer. Pete will be out on the road with us in the western leg of the tour next week. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But I tell you what, I don't know anybody that really works harder at understanding what the conditions are and what the potential is for the corn and soybean crops than what Pete Meyer does. So we're going to talk about what his thoughts are on the USDA yield estimates that we got last week, get his take on what he thinks the current weather is doing to yield potential. And, of course, I mean, if we're going to be talking to somebody from S&P Global, we're going to also talk about the potential impacts of the biofuel incentives that are in the Inflation Reduction Act, what kind of an impact that might have on the market. We've talked about the incentives and what it might do for overall demand, but we haven't talked a lot about what it will do for the markets, and we're going to do that with Pete today. All right, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, the wave of selling in the wheat complex swelled again today, with September soft red wheat dropping to levels not seen since October last year. The high range open and low range close in front month SRW keeps momentum with market bears even after five consecutive lower closes. Export sales of wheat in the week ended April 11 totaled just 207,000 metric tons, falling short of even the lowest pre-report trade expectations. The U.S. dollar index was trading nearly 1,000 points higher as grain trade was ending, adding to pressure in wheat futures. September hard red winter wheat futures 38.5 cents lower today, 8.12.5. September soft red wheat down 31.75, 7.31.5. September spring wheat closed at 8.52.75. Yeah. That's down 30.75 cents, Chip.
Yeah, it has been a beating in that wheat market this week. The dollar index right now up about 910 points. So still a big move in the dollar today.
The weather forecast from World Weather Inc. calls for, quote, a combination of mostly favorable soil moisture, timely rainfall, and milder than usual temperatures. World Weather added there are pockets of dryness and some areas of crop stress, but the environment is not very threatening, end quote. Despite the lack of a weather threat, corn prices ground higher again today and posted an outside trading day with a close above the opening range. Old crop corn export sales of 99,000 metric tons, Those were in line with trade expectations. New crop sales, 750,000 metric tons, topped even the highest trade guess. September corn futures 4.75 cents higher, 6.19 3/4. December corn up 3.75, 6.15 3/4. March corn futures closed at 6.22 3/4, up 3.5 cents. Feels like healthy market action in the corn market, Chip.
Yeah, I think it was healthy. We've got to keep an eye on what's going on with Ukraine and corn coming out of Ukraine as well. But when we look at the new crop sales, unknown destinations were at the top of the list. But then we had Mexico, China, Guatemala, Colombia, some very solid buyers in the market.
Soybean exports for old crop totaled 97,000 metric tons. New crop bean export sales hit 1.3 million metric tons. Double the highest pre-report trade estimate. China topped the list of buyers and tallied 779,000 tons of the new crop bean sales. November bean futures opened nearly steady, dropped through support at yesterday's low, then rallied to close above yesterday's high to complete an upside reversal. September beans, 20.25 cents higher, 14.95 1/2. Novi beans up 15.25, 14.05 1/4. January soybeans closed at 14.11 1/2, up 15 today.
Yeah, Mexico was also on that list of new crop bean buys at 165,000 tons. So it was good, solid buying.
Cotton export sales uninspired at 49,500 running bales. China accounted for 30,000 of those sales. October cotton, 120 points lower, 117.12. December cotton slipped 84 points, 112.70. Livestocks, beef export sales, 18,900 metric tons. China at the top of the list. October fat cattle, a buck 10 lower, 144.75. October feeders, a buck 87.5 lower, 187.67 1/2. Pork export sales, 13,600 metric tons, well below the previous weekend, the four-week average. October hogs, 475 lower, 93.30. Chip Flory.
All right, thank you very much, Davis. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures, joins us. Good afternoon, Oliver.
How are we doing, Chip?
Well, better than hogs. Got the rug pulled out from under it. What happened?
Oh man, it's as if the funds finally realized that this is a seasonally weak time of year. We made some new contract highs. I think that was late last week. Weren't able to get much follow through on the back of that, and I think that's just spurred some long liquidation. And now we're looking at a technical breakdown on the break below trend line support. Now, you know, we're kind of eyeing that gap, which goes back to July 6th, and that doesn't come in closer to about 90.25, down about 89.5. So if we can't get any reprieve here into the weekend, that's the next target to the downside.
Yeah. What's the next target to the downside in that wheat trade? Because, boy, we blew through most of the support in the market back to last fall's lows.
Yeah, we've been consolidating for the better part of the last couple months. At 770 area has been kind of the low end of the trading range in that December Chicago contract. As you'd mentioned, we blew through that in today's trade and are testing those lows from the January. So, and below that, there's really not a whole lot of support. Looking at the RSI, you'd think the RSI would be deeply oversold, but we're not even at 30. We're at 32. And typically 30 is what's, I guess, considered the line in the sand for being oversold. So we're not quite in oversold territory just yet. But I do think that there's going to be a great opportunity in wheat here in the near future. The dollar obviously breaking out to the highest level in a month didn't do any favors to prices today. But I'm hoping sometime in the next couple of weeks we'll be able to carve out a bottom and get these prices back working north again.
Yeah. Yeah, when wheat is doing what it's doing, it's hard for corn and soybeans to work to the upside, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but they were impressive. So hopefully they can keep that going. We had some good sales this morning. Hopefully we keep that going and get the funds back, excited about being long the grain markets.
Yep, excellent. Thanks, Oliver. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
All right, that is Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. It is time for a conversation with Pete Meyer, S&P Global Commodity Insights. That is up next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by FBN, where for a limited time, new customers can save an extra 5% on AgSaver glyphosate. Visit fbn.com/direct. Terms and conditions apply.
Which would be fine. I bet rent's cheap and would jump in on that.
You think?
Maybe car
I'll
crash?
Bet he would. Yeah.
You suppose car crash would come along too?
Might. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us. That is Davis Michelson. And
hi.
It is time for a conversation with Pete Meyer. Pete is the head of grain, oilseed, and advanced feedstocks analytics at S&P Global Commodity Insights. And he joins us right now. Pete, how are you?
Chip, I'm doing great. And I joined you with breaking news.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you, Davis. I'm sure you know that the Big Ten has signed a $7 billion deal to broadcast on a few different outlets. The breaking news is that the Big 12 is now negotiating with Facebook Live.
Facebook Live. That's great, Pete. You're just awesome.
Sorry, Chip. Had to go there.
I love that. Yeah. It's incredible. What was it? It's like $8 billion for 7 years. They're going to be doing
$7 billion. Right. $7 billion for seven. Right.
Okay. Right. Okay. And they're going to be doing.
That leaves your Cyclones and the Big 12 with Facebook Live. I'm afraid about that. Yep.
They're going to be doing morning games on Fox, afternoon games on, was it CBS? And then evening games NBC?
Right. CBS has a deal with the SEC, obviously. And so they have to wait. So they can't double dip, so to speak, I guess. I guess would be the best way I can put it for a while.
Holy
so it doesn't
smokes.
Start. I think it starts in 23 or something. Yeah, seven-year deal, $7 billion. Yep.
Unbelievable.
Good morning, everybody.
You know, I would like to say, well, no, Big 12 will be on ESPN, but that ain't going to happen. I mean, SEC 24/7. So,
yep. And I must give full attribution to Tony McDonald, who you know, and is also an Iowa State alum. He was the one that came up with that joke, so I have to give him full credit for it.
Don't
want to
like
steal
Tony.
Anybody's work.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. Yep. Sounds like Tony. All right. Well, there isn't a lot of inflation reduction going on in a $7 billion package there for the Big Ten, but the Inflation Reduction Act that we got from the Biden administration last week, it includes some incentives for biofuel production, the renewable diesel, the sustainable aviation fuel, ethanol, the infrastructure, a lot of it is in there. The biofuel world, we've talked with them. They're excited about it. They think it's really good. What about from a market perspective, Pete? What does it mean?
Well, I think from a market perspective, we look more at the sustainable aviation fuel because, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past. That's a huge deal. I mean, the sustainable aviation fuel is kind of I don't know if it's the canary in the coal mine, but it's one of those things where that could dwarf.
Well, it's the golden
diesel.
Ring.
Let's not forget that renewable diesel is really only, you only really get the tax credits from three states, you know. But I mean, it's all about to be considered positive at this point, especially given the continuing proliferation of the electrification of the U.S. vehicles, you know. So when we start to talk to Gevo and LanzaJet, and Gevo just signed a deal to build a huge plant out there in the Dakotas, you know, I mean, it's just a positive. It's just a positive for corn demand for SAF, and it's certainly not a negative for renewable diesel. Now, you know, what we have seen though, Chip, is that we have seen an awful lot of used cooking oil being used the last couple months in instead of soybean oil. And the reason for that is because the carbon intensity score on used cooking oil is much lower than soybean oil. But we are going to get to a point, in our opinion, by 2025, where it's going to be, okay, what can I use as a feedstock? Not necessarily what feedstock can I choose from.
Right. You know, so we find
this to be positive. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The greater use of the used cooking oil, that doesn't concern me. I mean, we're going to be looking for all sources to provide for that sustainable aviation fuel market, aren't we?
Well, the sustainable aviation fuel market, we believe, will be dominated by ethanol. The renewable diesel market is the one that's going to use cooking oil, fats, and tallows, and used cooking oil.
I was always going over to ethanol for the sustainable aviation fuel market, and I am told time and time again, no, that's more of a bean oil play than it is a play for ethanol.
You have plants out there that can either produce renewable diesel or sustainable aviation fuel from vegetable oils and fats and tallows and that sort of stuff. But our focus has been, given the announcement last fall or over the winter, I guess, that ADM was going to divert 50% of their ethanol production for sustainable aviation fuel. You know, we think that balances out your corn demand, given the issues with electric vehicle. I'm not an issue, but the electric vehicles, but also it balances out your corn demand because we would have had much, much lower corn demand for ethanol past 2025. And we just think that these guys were, smart enough to say, okay, well, everybody, all the renewable diesel folks are going to be jumping at the veg oil. Why don't we look for something else? And they've done a great job of it. They really have.
Who's the leader? Who is the leader on the sustainable aviation fuel? Who do we need to pay attention to?
Gevo, GEVO, LanzaJet is another one. But I mean, a lot of the renewable folks, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of other ones out there. But what we also see, Chip, on the soybean side is that we've had conversations with a company called Covercress, which is going to plant pennycress south of Route 80 in Illinois and Indiana this year. They just had a big infusion of cash. I don't know if you read that or not. Bayer bought 65% of them. Now, the reason that Bayer is involved there is that most of the hierarchy there at Covercress come from Monsanto, so it makes perfect sense. Global Clean Energy in California says they're going to run their plant 100% on camelina oil this fall. So we do see a lot of demand for alternative crops as well. The issue always is, and especially for pennycress, is, you can't really take it off until early May. So are the farmers in central and southern Illinois really going to kind of delay their planting of it would be soybeans after pennycress? Would they be willing to delay it to get another cash crop? So far, the numbers look very good as far as the amount of acres they've enrolled, and we plan on being out there in the fall to see them plant it, and also in the spring to see it harvested, because as analysts, we have no idea what the oil yield is on an acre of pennycress, but we'll be watching that very close. So we'll see what they do with the pennycress meal. I have no idea. Right. And as we all know, meal is a little bit in abundance at the moment.
Right, right. Right. Hey, that plant that you mentioned for Gevo up in South Dakota, Lake Preston, I believe, is where it is. I don't recall seeing what the feedstock is going to be on that. Is it a soybean crusher or is it a corn plant?
It looks like more. In the press release, they talked about access to both. They talked about access to how many acres of corn in that area and how many acres of soybeans they could get their hands on. Meanwhile, the guys at Shell Rock, Iowa, they're more focused on the amount of soybeans they can get in their immediate area. But Gevo has commented on both, but Gevo is also the same group that took all that, have a memo of understanding to take all that ethanol from ADM starting in 2025. So, and that's an incredible plant. That plant is going to be basically sustainable itself. Windmills are going to provide the electricity and everything. It's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly is. We're about a minute away from the break here, Pete. I just want to kind of to wrap up this part of the conversation. Have you ever seen a time that's more dynamic on the domestic front than what we're in right now for corn soybean use?
Never, never. I've never seen a time that's been this dynamic, period, because we have interest rates, we have everything else that's going on. But and the fact that climate change is affecting the yields, and we'll talk about that, I guess, in the next segment with Crop Tour coming up. You know, nobody can deny the fact that we have climate change and somebody has to do something about it. And the renewable space is certainly in it to win it.
They certainly are. And it is having an influence on decision makers out there. I mean, you can argue about, you know, our humans' impact on climate change, but the climate change is happening. The cycles happen. And it's part of it. And, the renewable guys, as you said, are in it to win it. It is an interesting time. We are talking with Pete Meyer. Pete is the head of grain, oilseed, and advanced feedstock analytics at S&P Global Commodity Insights. Let's talk yields next. Pete does a great job of keeping track of what's going on across the country. So we'll find out what he thinks about USDA's latest yield estimates. That's next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time now for news of note from Pro Farmer. The United States and Taiwan have agreed to start trade talks under a new initiative. The United Nations agreed in a new report that there is forced labor in Xinjiang. Another ship carrying corn left Ukraine on Thursday, bringing the total number of vessels to depart Black Sea ports to 25. Fresh fear is spreading among exporters and importers over whether massive amounts of cargo will be delivered on time for the busy year-end shopping season. U.S. importers seeking relief from bottlenecks at West Coast gateways are triggering new backups at East Coast and Gulf Coast ports. Chinese officials warned local governments are racing to maintain power and find fresh water to irrigate crops amid extreme drought. Eurozone inflation rose to a record 8.9% annualized rate in July. News of note is taken from the pages of Pro Farmer. Get more at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back. Glad that you are with us this afternoon. I'm Chip. We are in the middle of a conversation with Pete Meyer. Before we get back to Pete Davis, please go ahead and recap where the market's closed.
Chip, September HRW wheat futures were 38.5 cents lower, 8.12.5. September soft red wheat down 31.75 cents, 7.31.5. September corn futures 4.75 cents higher, 6.19.75. December corn up 3.75 to 6.15.75. September soybean futures 20.25 cents higher, 14.95.5. Novi beans up 15.25 to 14.05.25. December cotton down 84 points, 112.70. On your livestocks, October live cattle a $1.10 lower, 144.75. October feeder futures a $1.87.5 lower, 187.67.5. And October lean hog futures, $4.75 lower, $93.30. That's your quick market recap. Over to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Pete Meyer is at S&P Global Commodity Insights, heads up the analysis for the grain oil seeds markets. Pete, the yields that we got from USDA last week, the 175.4 bushels per acre for a national average corn yield. What's your thoughts there?
Can you hear me okay, Chip? Is that all right? Can you hear me?
You're pretty. Yeah, that one sounds like you're in a closet to me, buddy. So, hey, well, let's get you back.
How about now? Is this better?
Yeah, that's a little bit better. Joe, what do you want to do here, bud?
Oh, I probably will give him a phone call and we'll go back to
him. All right. Let's go ahead and do that. Let's get back to him on the phone.
Switch him back.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get him back so that we can hear him. 175.4 for a national average corn yield. The bean yield, and I talked about this yesterday. I showed my bias. And we'll find out from Pete here in just a moment what he's thinking about it. But 59.1 would tie the record from 2016. And, Davis, it's like I said yesterday, with the amount of, you know, we only did 51.4 a year ago.
We're not getting to 59. Come on. No way.
Well, 51.9 is
the estimate. Oh, you said 59.1.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. That's wow. Right. 51.9. A year ago was 51.4, and I don't know if we can do that or not. All right,
I don't know
let's get back
either.
To Pete. 175.4 for a national average corn yield. What's your thought there?
Our yield model is at 175.3 going in.
Wow.
So I have no complaints with it. The problem I have with it, Chip, is that my harvested acres are, even though the USDA lowered their harvested acres, I'm still 200,000 acres below them and heading lower. And the reason for that is all the silage being chopped or was trying to be chopped in the western states, Texas and Oklahoma, Kansas, even someplace Nebraska, southeast South Dakota. So I think, you know, I mean, overall, I'm still about 75 or 80 million bushels below where the USDA is, even though my yield is exactly the same. And you know how this works, right? As the acres go down in those, I hate to call them peripheral areas, but you understand what I'm saying, the yield goes up. So if I would have stayed with the USDA acreage, we did the quick calculation on it, my yield would have been 174 and change or something like that. Yeah. Now, you know, I don't really know. On the bean yield, I mean, it seems high to me. I mean, we went in at 51. The USDA was at 51.5. But I will say that our colleagues at IHS, the IHS market survey, came in at 51.9, so they kind of nailed it. So their corn number was around 176.9. But I think what this tells us, Chip, is that the surveyed farmer, especially in beans, has a very high opinion of the crop.
Yep.
A very high opinion of the crop. Because let's be honest, you mentioned it earlier. You know, there were no OY plot data, right? It's just the opinion in the satellites and the weather. So we'll see. I guess we're going to find out a little bit better next week.
Yeah, absolutely we will. Now, obviously, there's plenty of time to impact that bean yield with the weather. What about corn? Has there been damage done, and has that been accounted for? Can it get better than the 175.4?
It's interesting because I'm starting to see some statistics from Pioneer Corteva regarding solar radiation. And with the rain in the east, they're seeing a little bit more tip back than they would have thought, because the solar radiation has gone way down with the amount of cloudiness. Now, out west, we're starting to see some a little bit of tip back as well, but I think that's probably more to the heat. So, no, I would say that the rain could be very, very beneficial for the soybean crop for sure. If there's one thing we know that those Nebraska guys know how to grow soybeans, right? They stress them at the right time and they dump water on it. So now we'll have to see if it makes a difference. But the corn, no, I think the corn is kind of done. The only thing, you know, that worries me a little bit is last year, you know, the USDA did, or that doesn't worry me, but one thing to remember, last year the USDA put their lowest corn number out in August. But I wonder if this year the farmer said, well, I didn't think it looked so good last year, but it looks pretty good, but it yielded pretty good. So he has a higher opinion of his crop this year.
Yep.
Last year, as you know, Chip, you were on the West. I was on the West. It was stand count that made the stand counts that made the big difference in Iowa. Absolutely. And especially in Minnesota. That Minnesota crop this year is going to be tremendous. And when we talk to farmers, you know, they had that blast of heat early after planting, and we think that that helped emergence. My tour out in late June showed pretty good emergence for both crops. So we'll have to see. We'll just have to see.
Yep. Yep. You know, a year ago when we got to the record yield of 177 bushels per acre, you look at some of those edge areas, whatever you want to call them, but, you know, you look at and these are USDA's yields last year to the August estimate, but Alabama, 163 a year ago, estimated at 134 this year. Georgia, I'll throw it in there, 182 to 166. You've got Kentucky in at 192 a year ago, 147 this year. Kansas, a year ago, 139, 123 this year. Tennessee, where's Tennessee here? 170 a year ago, 130 this year. We're not getting the lift from the edge of the belt in 2022.
No, which puts all the pressure on the main states, right? It's going to put all the pressure on there. And if they fail, it's going to put a tremendous pressure on the Brazilian crop for next year, as well as Ukraine and some other issues and some other producers throughout the world. So, yeah, I think it's going to be tight. I understand all the excitement about today's export sales, but boy, you know, these exports are just not racking up the way I'd like to see them in new crop. They're really not. Now, that being said, I think China's short grain, and by grain I mean both wheat and corn. Not that they're short the market, you know what I mean. That they're just they haven't bought enough yet.
They haven't extended their coverage. Right.
I believe that.
Are they waiting for Ukraine to come back online?
Well, Ukraine's an interesting thing, right? I mean, I was speaking with some Dutch buyers today. And they were very surprised. It has even surprised them. They get Ukraine offers every day now. So Ukraine, you know, that stuff, but then again, that's old crop, right? So that's moving along. So, but they are surprised at the fact that they, like I said, they're getting offers every day for Ukraine corn. But, you know, the 22 crop, okay, it looks okay. You know, that's all well and good. But I start to worry about the 23 crop. What did the seed acreage look like over there? You know, I mean, Corteva is the largest seed supplier for corn in Ukraine, and I think the second largest in sunflower. And you don't really hear much. I mean, are all those people that work for them still working there? Have they got detasseled in time? How are they going to process it? So I think that there's a little bit of concern for us anyway, regarding what happens in 23, regarding the supply of seed, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it is a big question mark over what the supplies are going to be coming out of Ukraine into the, not just on the 23-24 marketing year, but you can go beyond that as well.
I would agree. And I would also, you know, let's not forget as well. I mean, USDA lowered EU corn crop from 68 to 60 million tons. We're at 55. And sinking fast. So, you know, a lot of those Ukraine offers are going to the EU, right? So you're still going to need to fill the gaps elsewhere, including China. That's, you know, unless China outbids everybody else. But you're going to, you know, again, we go back. There's a lot of pressure on this expected record corn crop coming out of Brazil this year. A lot of pressure. And I would say
a lot of pressure.
Almost an equal amount of pressure on the possibility of 150 million metric tons of beans, especially with how dry it's been there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Has China finished up their getting the paperwork done to bring corn in from Brazil?
Yeah. Yeah. That looks like that's fairly good. So now I'm not saying the market's going to take off. I mean, I think that the market needs the funds in it. And I heard Oliver Swoop talking about this earlier, but the funds are done. Right? The funds we talked to are like, yep, made our money. Thanks. See you later. Maybe next year. You know, who knows? So I think, but what this does tell me, though, we have a 625 price on corn. we think it's very, very well supported here at these current levels. We did get a reaction back. The reaction today, it didn't really surprise us. But, you know, I think that what we're seeing is there's an underlying bid for corn based on what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in the EU, and uncertainty about the Brazilian crop.
Fantastic. Pete, we'll see you in Sioux Falls, buddy.
See you, bud. Travel safe.
All right. You bet. That is Pete Meyer. He is the head of grain, oilseed, and advanced feedstock analytics at S&P Global Commodity Insights. All right, Davis, I hope you got a list of things because there were some highlights there. We're going to cover them next right here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Thanks so much for spending some time today tuned to the program. Chip Lowry joins. I'm Davis Michelson. Did I say my name? Did I say that? Did I say it twice?
No, I don't think you did.
I don't think I did either.
I think you did a wonderful job, and until you started questioning yourself, I thought it was a great comeback.
Isn't that always the way? You know,
just
stumble forward. I'm completely self-taught, so you know,
yeah,
I have no formal training in this. I don't know what I'm doing. It's some interesting notes on what was it, Pennycress?
Yeah,
I'm completely new to Pennycress.
Yeah, me too.
Spent some time on the Google machine while you and Pete Meyer from S&P Global Platts were talking. This from agmrc.org, Agricultural Marketing Resource Center.org. This updated in February 22, and I thought this was sort of interesting. I'm quoting the website here. The seed meal from Pennycress offers potential as a biofumigant and or for weed seed germination suppression because of its high level of glucosinolates. Glucosinolates? Okay. Glucosinolates. Furthermore, it can be a source of fertilizer for high-value horticultural crops for both conventional and organic growers.
I'll be darned.
This is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It can stifle weed seed germination, and that because I don't know, maybe you can tell me, glufosinate, glucosamine, glucosinolates, I don't know how all these fit together.
Oh, I don't either.
But no. when it all starts with glue, it's gotta be pretty similar. Right.
Yeah, right. You and I think that way. I don't know if somebody that actually knows what they're talking about would say about that, but there you go.
Well, I am also a self-taught scientist, so take that for what it's worth. But wouldn't that be interesting if it was a source of fertilizer for high-value horticultural crops for both conventional and organic growers?
When Pete was talking about Pennycress and some of the other alternative oil seeds that are out there, and the fact that some of these oil seeds can double as cover crops. Harvest in the spring, early in the spring, and then plant a crop of corn or soybeans behind it, whatever. It's all very interesting, and a couple of things that I've thought about over the years is the need for a third viable crop in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
Corn and soybeans support a lot of the economy in rural America in the middle of the country. But wouldn't it be something if there was a third crop that could compete economically against corn and soybeans?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, think of what that does to the competition for acres and so on. I mean, it's really a dynamic time. We're going to learn more about what can be done in the next,
mm-hmm.
call it 10 years, than what we've learned in the last 50.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, this website does point out there's a lot agronomically that they don't understand. It does, however, say it's a pretty prolific seed producer, up to 15,000 seeds per plant. These seeds can form a long-lived seed bank up to 20 to 30 years, making it difficult to eradicate from an area once population becomes established. So,
yeah, you know, there was a time that we thought Jerusalem artichokes were a good idea and multiflower roses for fence rows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of where it took a long time to get rid of those artichokes, and we're still dealing with multiflower roses all over the place. It's crazy. I mean, I spray those things out of my yard, you know, along the timber in my yard every year. I mm-hmm. got to spray them. It's crazy.
Yep. You know, I was thinking when Pete was talking there for a minute, I was like, this guy gets it. He really, really gets it. His corn yield is going up. Well, his corn yield is holding steady as harvested acreage goes down. And almost sounded like he sees the potential for harvested acreage to dive a little bit deeper even on the corn side.
He said take another 200,000 acres off at minimum, and that number may be getting bigger as we go because more guys are having to move quickly to chop a corn crop that maybe – and instead of chopping a third of their acres, maybe they're having to chop 40% of their acres or 40 – you know, any percentage increase takes away from the harvested corn acres for grain.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you move those acres around, it changes the dynamics of that national average yield.
Yep.
The more acres that are cut for silage, because most likely those are going to be the lower grain yielding acres. You take those lower yields out, give those acres a no yield,
mm-hmm.
not a zero yield. A no yield for harvested for grain acres, and it pushes up your national average yield. That's exactly right.
That's almost like exactly right. That could be the next country music dance sensation. Chop a corn crop. Chop a corn crop. Chop a corn crop. Chop a corn. Chop a corn crop.
You know, you keep working on that.
I don't know.
You keep working on that. You're going to end up on America's Got Talent or something like that, dude.
I don't know.
National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook August 24th through the 28th. We've got near normal temperatures expected over the bulk of the Corn Belt. You get into some below normal temperature expectations, Kansas, Oklahoma, and into Texas. Panhandle's got some pretty good odds of below normal temperatures at that time. You know, we've got some above normal temperatures expected in Alaska. And near normal to below normal in the middle of the country here.
Is that right?
Watch that. Yeah, watch that correlation.
Watch that.
Yeah, watch that correlation. It happens quite often. And then we've got above normal precipitation expected through western North Dakota, most of South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and points to the east and south of that. So some timely rains without the stress of high temperatures is what it looks like we've got in the forecast to me. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Come back tomorrow morning for the free-for-all. Mike Steenhook is going to join us.